Turn it up. To the left. Take it back now, y'all. Five hops this time.
Welcome back. I'm Matthew Law Middleton, and this is Central Standard. This past weekend, three more police officers were killed in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The shooter, a Kansas City resident, apparently was motivated by recent killings of black men at the hands of police. Tensions were high. But in Wichita, you may have heard that activists and police came together for a community cookout. We were hearing a little bit of that just there. Joining us to share that story is A.J. Bohannon. He's a leader and an activist in Wichita. Hello, A.J.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for making the time for us. I'm curious, your original plan was to protest Sunday night. Can you briefly tell me how this cookout came about instead?
Some guys that I'm working with by the names of DeJuan Washington and Brandon Johnson, they have some direct contacts with the police department. We work hand in hand, all three of us. We're really, you know, a strong force here in this town. We do a lot of work together. So they reached out to one of my friends, DeJuan. He has a direct contact with the police chief. So we met with him over lunch. The day we did a protest on Tuesday, and on Wednesday we met with him during lunch. And we had the opportunity to, really sit down and give him, you know, some of the issues that we were facing, some of the things that were, you know, tearing this community apart. And there's a big divide here in this town between the community and the police department. So we wanted to try to do something that would be able to bring everybody together on one accord so that we could try to, spark the conversation and try to seek some of that change that we've been looking for so long in this town.
Mm. Was this the first time that you had a meeting with this police chief?
Yes, it was the first time that I personally met with him. Like I said, it's about three of us, my friends and two of my friends and myself. We do a lot together, so they work a lot, with the political side and a lot of the reforms and things like that and the policy. So they've met with him before. Matter of fact, they had met with him Tuesday morning before I had did the march that Tuesday evening. They met with him that morning, and he agreed to, some things on that morning about backing some of the things that we're looking at as far as independent prosecutors and as far as a citizens review board with subpoena power. Those are some of the things that they had addressed with him that morning. So they've met with him before, but with the relationship that I have with them, they brought me in that evening, and that's when we talked to him.
Mm. We hear a lot about police community relations across the country, but typically when something bad happens, but depending on where your particular story is, can you help us understand what's been going on in Wichita historically? You kind of alluded to that earlier, and what's been going on more recently.
Most definitely. Recently here, there have been 8 officer-involved shootings, and our DA has found all of those officers that have done those shootings. He found them not guilty. And that's an issue here. So what we're really pushing at is we're trying to get an independent prosecutor to come in and look at some of those cases. That's what we want to do, going forward. We want an independent prosecutor to come in and look at those cases because the fact that the DA that we have now, he's not doing his job, but all of those things have not been justified. So we really want to have an opportunity for somebody from the outside to come in and look at it, because it's quite difficult. If a police officer shoots somebody and then he goes and gets a friend, a lawyer is probably his friend, the lawyer knows the judge knows the DA. So it's kind of like everybody's in the same circle. So we want to get somebody with outside influence to actually come in and take a look at what's going on here. That's a lot about what's going on, with the officer-involved shootings. We just want to see something different done, so they'll probably look at some different results coming our way.
Mm. And it sounds like this is a kind of personal issue for you. What got you involved in becoming a really active activist?
Those two guys that I mentioned earlier, I was doing some things, independently, together we stand, divided we fall. So my cousin had got shot and killed by a police officer in 2012, and I witnessed that. So that really, it lit a fire within me, that I really wanted to try to do something and try to get some things done. So I start reaching out to people, and thankfully I met them, and they kind of start leading me in the right direction and showing me the way. And then from there, it's just grown tremendously throughout this city.
I think it can be hard to envision what specifically police departments can do to confront issues of implicit bias and racism in individual officers. What are you hoping to see?
What I really want to see, we're really looking to get some community policing integrated into this town, because I believe that if you take the time, you know, to stop and talk to someone, you're less likely to shoot them and more likely to gain a relationship with them. So when you do show up, you already have that relationship and have that knowledge of that individual that you're dealing with, so that encounter will be less likely to end up with a death. For instance, here we had an individual that was shot and killed last 4th of July. He was a ex-Marine, and he did 3 tours in Iraq, and he had PTSD. And, you know, PTSD and 4th of July mixed all into one situation, that's a recipe for disaster. You know, they just don't do well with those sounds, and you know, and it creates flashbacks that are really hard to deal with. And then the police showed up, and they escalated the situation, and he ended up getting shot and killed. But, you know, had we had some community policing prior to that, the police officers that patrol that area, they would have been riding around and, you know, take the time to get out. And if they would have had a conversation with him, he would have let them know, hey, this is who I am. This is what I've done. I've done 3 tours. You know, I have PTSD. You know, so when they show up, they know, like, okay, well, we've talked to him several times before, so I know what's going on here, so let's try to de-escalate the situation. But, you know, since a lot of community policing is not being done in this area, that conversation was never had. And that 1 5-minute conversation could have potentially saved his life. So we definitely want to see a lot more community policing going on in this town. That's something that I believe that we all could benefit from. And then, you know, cultural competency training as well, because, you know, as a people, we are trained to deal with the officers, but it's really not a lot of training that the officers have or that they're receiving in order to deal with us.
Right.
So we have legislators that are going to introduce legislation next session, and the chief did agree that he's going to lobby for that.
Great. And to take us to the cookout, can you briefly tell us what happened there and what that meant to you personally and for your community?
Well, the cookout, like I said, it was an opportunity to let voices be heard. I believe after the protest that we did that Tuesday prior to the cookout, there were a lot of people that were coming out and they were grieving. So we wanted to have more of a, you know, controlled environment to where those questions could be answered. The chief agreed to a question and answer session. And I believe that for the community, we have people that actually, you know, had some things that they wanted to ask him and that he took the time to answer. It was bigger than a cookout. The food and everything like that, I mean, I see the national attention that the cookout is receiving, but it wasn't about an officer dancing. It wasn't about eating and things like that. It wasn't about the food. It wasn't about the officer. It was about the issues that we're trying to address within this community and for the chief to take the time out to meet with the community and bring other officers with him. I believe that that was huge. And that's why, you know, we called it the First Step Cookout, because it was really genuinely only the first step in a long journey that we have ahead of us. This is not going to be a quick fix. This is not going to happen overnight. But I believe what we did is we took the first step into making sure that it does happen.
Yeah. Do you think that events like this could work anywhere?
I do believe that events like that could work anywhere. But the thing about it is, we're not fighting the same fight that, you know, maybe Kansas City is fighting or maybe Dallas is fighting. I believe that it would be kind of hard-pressed for Dallas to come together right now with their community. So there may be some things that may need to happen prior to that. But I believe if there's enough manpower and willpower, where there's a will, there's a way. I believe if the people come together and really try to look at ways to make that change and ways to integrate some of these things that we're doing here in Wichita and into their own societies, I believe that it would make for a greater community. Like, again, it's just a lot of people were afraid to take that first step. So here in Wichita, we really wanted to make sure that the first step was taken. And if we're going to take a step, we want to make sure that we took that step in the right direction.
Right. AJ Bohannon, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us this morning.
Thank you. You have a great day.
Wonderful. We're going to now turn to Octavio Villalobos. You may already know him as Chato. He's a KCPD police officer. Good morning, Chato.
Good morning.
And so hearing this story about the police and the community coming together in Wichita, how does that resonate with you?
He made some really good points. You know, I saw the video. It was a good video to see, but I love that he said that this is, it's not just about throwing a picnic. What are the next action steps? You know, how do we continue this dialogue? And I just want to commend the organizers for having, you know, for being the ones that reach out and have the courage to say, hey, you know, we want to have this conversation. And that's probably the hardest thing for a lot of people considering what's going on. But I like seeing that happen. I know that we've done some stuff in Kansas City to try to make that happen historically, but as long as that our police department continues to acknowledge that there is an issue and that people want to have a seat at the table, they want peace just like we do. I think more things like this definitely need to happen. And both, you know, chief of polices of organizations and organizers definitely need to have that conversation and not just talk, but definitely have some action plans to get this place to where we need to be as far as closing in the gap that's out there.
Mm-hmm. And talk to me about that gap. How do you see the police in the relationship with the community in Kansas City?
You know, we have a ways to go. Historically, Kansas City, when you look at a lot of the economic policies that used to exist back in, I don't know if you guys, people from Kansas City understand J.C. Nichols, but not a lot of people know about the title deeds and the
racial covenants.
Yeah, a lot of those things that really divided the city in the past and that we're still paying for that. When you look at school districts and how they're funded, and if historically you lower the land value of a certain part of the city based on who lived there or based on these type of economic policies that existed, well, that's going to have a large effect on your ability to raise taxes for those school districts. When you have unemployment or poverty and hunger and food deserts and all those kind of things that really affect people and the quality of life, you know, we have a chief that's from the city who grew up in inner city, so he has an understanding of some of those things. So I think that puts us a little bit of advantage. But when we look at the violence and the homicide rates, we obviously have a long ways to go. And I don't know, I think our department has several initiatives, and they've been there for the last 25 to 30 years, but there's still obviously some lack of trust, and especially what's going on in the nation between those two entities, community members who live in disenfranchised communities and police departments. But I have faith. You know, I see some good things happening, but I also need to acknowledge that we have a ways to go.
Have you witnessed those moments of a ways to go yourself? Have you been part of them?
Yeah. You know, I mean, when I was a kid, I was petrified of police officers. And I know for lack of time, I won't get into it, but there was a moment when I was 15 and I had lost a real good friend to a drive-by shooting. And I acknowledge that there's violence out there and there's people who have chosen to do this for a living, that's just their choice. But it's hard when we punish communities, though, for those kind of acts, you know, where we label communities as high crime areas versus, you know, communities in distress. And shortly after that killing, I remember specifically a police officer. We were playing baseball in a park on the west side, and it was dark, and he got out of his car, and we didn't know if we had to run or not. It's just learned behavior. You know, you're scared of them because when they show up, it's law enforcement time. At least that was my experience. And this guy climbed his pole, and good thing I don't remember his name. I don't want to get him in trouble, but this was 30-something years ago. And he pulled out Leatherman and went into this electricity box and turned on the lights so that we could play. Sorry.
No, take a moment.
It was that gesture that really, for those guys that were playing, that were with me in that baseball park, which happened to be a block away from where my friend got killed, it meant a lot because it was an unkept park. We were playing under the lights, and we saw that patrol car come by a few times. I think he wanted to justify his action, like, okay, I did a good thing. You know, these guys are playing ball. And so that really sent a message to me that officers, if given the opportunity or when they decide to take that initiative to metaphorically pull out their Leatherman, then there would be more positive interaction, more positive experiences for people in these disenfranchised communities. And it would be more faith that whenever it comes time to do the ugly part of the job, take somebody to jail, write a ticket, or in worst case scenario, have to use lethal force, then I think those conversations are as hard as those situations are easier to have. I know there's a bunch of cops that do take those times and they're not made public, but I also know that there's distrust for there's people with personal experience. And we have to acknowledge that. And I think that's the first step. If we just validate the community and says, yeah, I get it, but we have to reach out, and our successes in community policing have been because the community said, hey, Chato Villalobos, we're done letting you mess it up. We're going to help you now. Instead of me trying to figure it out, like trying to educate myself on the issues in the community and trying to do a good job. I only have a certain amount of training. My training will get you home safe at night, will get me home safe at night. But there's an extensive amount of learning that we have to have and acknowledge that these communities have historically have gone through some things systemically in the city. And when we open ourselves up to that kind of conversation and we educate ourselves as police officers, it does help us be a lot more successful.
Why did you become a police officer?
Oh, man. It was actually on a challenge. I was actually...
A bet?
Well, somewhat. My mentor, Gilbert Guerrero, he raised me to become a teacher. He was like, I'm going to get you from the community. We need more Latino teachers representation. Because in Kansas City, Missouri at that time, Latinos were dropping out in the district, like 75%, something ridiculous. So he took it upon himself to hire young people from the community to be tutors in after-school program, so that when they graduate from high school, we could go off to be educators or go and study. So that was the plan. I got into college. I struggled a little bit, and I realized this is way too dangerous. I think I want to be a cop. Just kidding. I admire educators. It was a calling. It was just a calling, and I left my community, you know, a safe place. And I was very educated on the economic gaps. I was very educated on the educational, just the things that were lacking. I was very educated on just the inequalities that were out there systemically that had nothing to do with law enforcement, but also the criminal system. I mean, you could see the stats of how many men of color are in prison, all that. So things were broken systemically. And I just, you know, I was bilingual, and that was the largest growing demographic in Kansas City, was the immigrant population, Hispanic, or the Latino population. So I had a skill asset. I had military experience, and I wanted to just go do it. And I got the blessing from my community to go ahead. I probably wouldn't have made a good teacher anyways.
You are known in Kansas City not only as a police officer, but as a youth mentor and a poet. You wrote a poem called Brown Eyes in Blue, and in it there were these moments where I picked up on like fear in your work. Talk to me about how that fear plays out for you in your job.
Yeah, you know, just the reality of the West Side, it's come a long way. You know, the people of the West Side have really put into work to put in institutions that like libraries and community centers and grow the schools, because they realize that stuff, if we just sat around and wait for it, it wasn't coming. Those fears had to do with, I know what the uniform one time represented. I sit with senior citizens and they tell me these horrible stories about how they had to run to the park because if the cops caught you on the wrong street, you know, you would be dealt with. And that was a horrible thing. I never lived through that, you know. And so I understand the culture of fear because there wasn't a relationship. And so when I came back to the community in my uniform, I wasn't accepted right away, except for the people who knew me intimately. And I understood that, but it was scary because I wanted to be accepted right away. But when I came back with my police training, I had my own biases. You know, I know you watch the videos and you see the stats of how often police officers are shot or killed on duty. And that creates like this sense of awareness. But what I made the mistake was I treated everyone like they could kill me instead of really having the courage to have relationships with people where you make yourself vulnerable, but it does make you safer too. If you have relationships with people, you get to know people and what they're dealing with. You know, I was able to come back to my roots and use that knowledge and as a police officer. And I see a lot of cops doing that, you know, just opening up themselves to relationships. And you do take that stuff home with you when you do that. But that's why I think words like compassion and empathy are synonymous with courage. And I think police departments now are trying to encourage that. Like, we need to get out there and meet the people we're obligated to protect and serve, because right now the trust is not there.
Yeah, it's interesting to use compassion and empathy. Like, one thing I was hearing in the previous conversation with AJ, like, we talk about community policing, but some of the things that I was actually picking up on when he said community policing, I was thinking about, like, this idea of sensitivity.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that when we're talking about community policing, there's a part of me that feels like we're actually just talking about empathy. We're talking about sympathy. We're talking about giving people the benefit of the doubt. And taking the courage to, you know, maybe not, you know, draw a weapon instantly, even though you're very afraid.
Absolutely. And we have to acknowledge that historically in Kansas City, this was real. These broken systemic issues that affected people, you know, you made a reference to what they're like the deeds and all those kind of things that existed in Kansas City. And as police officers, we have to just understand, I think, and maybe. If our department, I think our department is trying to do a lot of that stuff. Like, we got to educate our officers on what the history is here, and that we can become our position of power and influence, and in some cases privilege. We could look at those things as opportunities versus a sin, a born natural born sin. And I think that's where the divide is. People are holding a group of people accountable for a lot of things in the past, and that's okay. We have to be okay with that and take that as a gift or a challenge. To say, well, let's use our position of power and influence and privilege. You know, as a male, I have to understand that women do not make equal pay, you know, and that's still an issue. And I can use my position of power, influence, and privilege. Well, it goes the same whether you're racial, whether you're from the city or not, if you're a police officer from the suburbs. If you have the courage, or at least you're encouraged to, it's just, I think right now there's so many challenges with manpower and 911 calls and calls for service and time. That it's really hard for cops to get out of their cars, but things like community policing can help. Things like the PAL program, DARE program, just a lot of where we're specifically in the communities, you know, trying to build those relationships. Those things help out a lot.
Right. You also have a particular perspective as a person of color that you alluded to earlier. In your poem, you wrote how it really complicates not only your work, but your identity.
Yeah. I mean, Kansas City, you know, back in those days, I wrote that poem 10 years ago, so it wasn't in lieu of all the things happening, but how it resonates now with all the things going on.
Yeah, how has it changed for you?
It's, you know, it's we're seeing it more and more, you know, but it's always happened. You know, there's always been economic divides. There's always been, you know, a race division in this country, and we're seeing it more and more. And when you hear the rhetoric with the presidential candidates, you see it's very real. So... that was based on just a little experience just from my community and my, you know, police experience at that time. I only had 6 years on, and now I see it more where I know there's cops and commanders and everybody that, like, we want to fix this. We don't want to be looked at as the bad guys. We understand the trust is broken. I just think that, like, the people from Wichita, they had the courage to say, we're going to sit down with you and we're going to talk and we're not going to let you mess this up. We don't want you. We need you. And those conversations have to continue to happen. They've happened for a long time in Kansas City, but as long as they're still, if they're still not a trust, then we just need to keep working, you know. And I hope, it's my dream for all the cops that I've had relationships with in homicide, when I was working in homicide unit as a detective or working on the street, there's cops, we do care. I mean, there's a lot of cops that do take it home with them, and they want to solve those crimes and bring justice to those young people that have been molested or killed, or those families that feel like they have to live in a place where there's high violence. But I think if we educate ourselves enough, we can understand that there's other systems in place that are broken, that if we don't fix those as well, not the police department, but elected officials or whoever it is in that position of power to fix the hunger, the poverty, the lack of employment, the education inequalities. And I think that'll help make our job easier.
Yeah, that's one thing that's been striking me about this whole event is that, or these series of events, that it seems like the police are kind of at this focal point for a systemic parts of it that are a systemic problem. You obviously alluded to elements of it that the police do own. You know, they're also called on to respond to situations. Do you see this as both a systemic problem or?
Police departments need to do a better job. We can't do it alone. So I'm not trying to get, we need to own a lot what's going on. But we can't do this alone. I mean, the psyche of having to knowing that every call is a potential dangerous call, and then having to, there's terms that we use. Instead of approaching anything like a warrior, we need to approach them like a guardian. Some people say it means the same thing. Well, yeah, I love the warrior in me. I love that I have the courage. If something's going down, I have two kids at home expecting me to come home, but I signed up for this. I need to go in there and take care of this, and it can be a very life or death situation. And I've had numerous experiences with that on the police department, so that's very real. But as long as I don't go in there also with a heart ready to be part of the healing when the things, whether it de-escalates or it leads to an arrest or it leads to just a problem-solving issue, if I'm not prepared to care, like, what led to this? Is it alcoholism? Is it mental health issue? Is it poverty? Is it somebody at their wit's end? And prepare to be a catalyst to be like, all right, I'm not just an occupying force here. I want to be a partner with you. What is it that got us here? Then I think we're going to still be answering those kind of calls. We can't ignore the thing that's going on there. And we also, it's okay for us to say, I don't have the skill asset to counsel somebody, but I can, you know, be aware of things out there that can help this situation and understand the history that this was there before me. I don't have to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. And we have just a few more seconds left, but I'm curious, what do you feel like the future holds for you and for Kansas City?
I'm not going anywhere, you know, as long as this police department will have me. I've been embraced by my fellow officers. We've had great conversations, but I'm not going nowhere, and I hope we continue to work at this.
Well, Chato, I hope that you can come back and join us again and continue this conversation. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Central Standard is going to take one more break. When we return, we'll be bringing you an inside look at the band Yes, You Are. Stay with us.